To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 162. I am your host, Dallas, and with me I have
a baby and Rook.
Yeah, that's right, a baby and Rook. This is my daughter Emily's first appearance on the show. And since it is her first appearance, you're going to want to hold on to this show because it'll probably be worth a lot of money in the future.
Oh, yeah. This is like, you know, first appearance, mint condition. You guys make sure you
get it slabbed.
Yeah.
CGC, right. Baby.
Grade and, this thing.
Yeah, there's going to be like variant covers of it too. A couple chrome covers. So
die cut, pop out, gatefold.
I almost made Brooks spit his coffee everywhere. We're being old men drinking coffee.
Yep.
Love it. Is that your phone blowing up?
Probably. Sorry. Who knows?
Good radio. So, hey, welcome everybody. Thanks for tuning in once again. It's a special episode this time. Don is out on vacation celebrating his 30th anniversary with his wife, Myrna. So they're somewhere.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary, guys. I'm sure you're going to be listening to this, Don, because you're one of the few people that do. So, Rookie baby, how's it going?
Good, man. Good. How you doing?
I'm not doing too bad.
Living the daddy life here.
For real. It's been an absolute whirlwind. It's been awesome, though. My wife's been in school for a couple of days now, out of town. So this morning, Emily and I got up and we went grocery shopping and she was awesome. Came home.
You brought her to the comic book shop yet?
No.
Oh,
I've brought her to the mall, but we haven't stopped in the shop.
Well, yeah, she was there for Free Comic Book Day.
That's right.
But that was chaos.
Yeah, that was a little crazy.
That's too much for a baby.
No, I've been wanting to today, but taking her to the grocery store and the mall, I think it's a little much. She's still only 2 months old.
Yep.
Anyway, she's staring at the computer right now, so she's pretty excited. I'm going to get her to listen to this episode. And hopefully she'll give us a nice review on iTunes.
No. What you have to do is you have to have her listen to this episode when she's like 18 for the embarrassment factor.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. You sound like a dork.
So nice. What's new in your life, man? What's going on?
Oh, man. So much going on right now. Of course, we are in the midst of the DC Rebirth, which, you know, sure, a lot of people talked a lot of crap about this. But I got to tell you, I'm having a lot of fun here.
Okay, so I'd like to jump into that. I haven't read any of it. I just, before the show started, I thumbed through the DC Universe Rebirth issue. I don't know if that's what it was
The
called.
One shot. Yep.
The one shot. And it kind of introduces everything.
I should say, all the Rebirths are one shots, but this is the whole universe. This is the kickoff of the whole thing, DC Universe Rebirth.
It had a couple jaw-dropping moments, especially a massive revelation at the end. And it's fantastic.
Yep.
Before we do go further, let's put out a spoiler warning, because we are going to discuss this in...
Massive spoiler warning, okay? So if you haven't read these and you're intending to, stop listening, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Unless you don't care about those kind of things.
Yeah.
If in that case, you're crazy.
Yeah, keep listening. Whatever.
So this whole Rebirth thing. Now, this is pretty recent, right? This just started up?
This just started up like 2-3 weeks ago. And this is, I mean, I had a conversation with Steve at Yancey Street about this thing. And he went to a big meeting about this with other comic book stores. Owners went and met up with the execs from DC.
Huh.
And DC was really pushing this thing, really kind of putting it out there like, hey, you know, this is going to be huge.
Let me ask one question. Mm-hmm. Is this mean they're negating the New 52? What's happening with that?
The New 52 is being, I don't know if I should say replaced, but it's all kind of getting streamlined. The original continuity is all coming back. And some of the New 52 is being melded. It's all kind of getting pushed together in a way, I guess you should say.
So this is the point of Rebirth.
There's all right, let's just get into this issue. From what it looks like they're doing, they're trying to state that someone was responsible for New 52.
Like an individual, like a villain or...
I don't know that he's a villain yet.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he was a hero. And in case you guys haven't guessed, we're talking about the Dr. Manhattan thing at the end of the issue, okay?
Boom.
There's your spoiler. I hope you guys shut it off beforehand. If you didn't listen, your fault. You. But here's the thing is, from what I'm seeing, what I'm understanding is they're trying to state that Dr. Manhattan is the one that's responsible for 52.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
He is somehow the one that made all that happen.
So have they given any intent behind that yet? Like, why would have done that besides just wanting to create life?
Not that I am aware. Yeah, right. I will create life at the end of The Watchmen.
And that might be the – there it is.
That might be it. That might be him going, okay, let's play with this, you know. I don't know. I don't really now, I've started reading the other Rebirth titles. I haven't gotten very far yet. But – I had a lot of people talking online, or saw a lot of people talking online, had one guy in particular come at me wanting to know if I felt it was somehow disrespectful to Alan Moore and the Watchmen franchise, and the guy obviously didn't like it, so he felt everyone should not like it. Personally, I think it's a very interesting twist, and a very, it's got me. DC's got me. Okay.
We've talked about these kind of things before, and I guess the thing is, these are properties. They're owned by DC.
They are owned by DC, so absolutely.
When Alan Moore went in, him and Dave Gibbons and Ian, the inker, I can't remember his name, when they went in and created The Watchmen, they were knowingly doing it under DC rights. Like, they knew that DC was going to own everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, initially when they did Watchmen, they were just going to take the old Charlton characters, so they weren't even going to create their own original characters anyway. But maybe a few years ago I would have felt different, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a little older and more grizzled. But I personally don't see a problem with it either. Looking at it from the angle that they are properties, they're owned by DC, of course they can do what they want to do with them.
Yeah. Well, there was an article online, something about how one of the co-creator of Watchmen was not even advised, didn't even get talked to about all of this. And to that I say, yeah, do you think the creator of Batman and Superman are talked to every single time they write a Batman and Superman title?
When they do something to Kitty Pryde in Marvel, they don't call up Chris Claremont because he created her and say, hey, we're going to do this to her. Is that cool?
Hey, Rob Liefeld, do you mind if we put Deadpool in a dress? You know? I mean, come on, guys. Seriously. You have to understand that these characters are written and created and contracted, purchased by these companies. So, you know, this goes back to the whole, you know, creator rights argument, okay? Well, if a creator of something didn't want it owned by one of the big boys, the big companies, that's when you went to one of the little guys and you got it published there and you kept control of it. Okay,
which is easier to do these days.
Which is easier to do.
A couple decades ago, it was
right when Watchmen was created. It was very difficult to do that kind of stuff. Understandable, however, you know, it's at some point. I'm sorry, but you gotta get up out of the sandbox and realize let somebody else play with them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, and I mean, there's a large amount of artistic integrity involved. But look, if you don't like the idea, that's fine. And of course, a lot of people aren't going to like the idea, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not.
But just don't read the story, I guess. That's all I could say. I mean, a number of years back, there was a series called After Watchmen that came out.
Which I found deplorable. I hated that series. It dragged on.
But the fact was, a lot of people were up in arms about that. Now, like I said, that's fine. Yeah. You can like it, you can not like it. But if you don't like it, just don't read it. No. I couldn't care less about it personally, so I just never read the books.
Well, all I can say is, if a vast majority of people are looking at this Rebirth and saying they don't like it, then explain to me why it's flying off the shelves, kids. Okay? Seriously, this stuff cannot be kept in stock.
Well, it's because it's got Batman on the cover.
Oh, yeah. You know, seriously, like, all of these issues that I have sitting here of the number ones, I've got the Rebirth number one for Superman, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Batman. Those are the ones I've been able to pick up so far. Okay? These four, I actually had to go back to the shop after the fact in order to be able to pick up and buy these because Steve had to maneuver some things and talk with some people in order to get additional first print copies. Some of the stuff is already in third printings.
Wow, and it's new, too.
It's brand freaking new, and some of the stuff is already in third printings. So,
Can I just say that Rook walked in here with, like, a foot-tall stack of comics like a boss, and he's like, I'm ready to talk.
Well, all right, so some fascinating things happening with the DC main lines. Really cool things, possibilities galore. We don't know where they're going.
Can I just say, though, that just real quick to touch on that whole Doc Manhattan thing, the reveal in the book was done. It was a nice, slow reveal, and there was a slow burn throughout the entire book. It's almost, it is a mystery.
It is. It is. It's a slow, you don't really get it.
Yeah.
When you get to the end of that book, you flip back and you're like, wait a minute, what the? Oh!
And that's exactly what Rook did to me. He said, well, remember this page.
Yep,
and
then I marked the page.
We went back to an earlier page, and he showed me just how everything kind of put itself together. It was done really well. Don't get me wrong, I liked it. And it was a jaw-dropping moment when I saw, you know, that last page or so with the Doc Manhattan insinuation.
Yep. So, you know, and that's the thing right now is that they're doing a lot of insinuating, okay? They're not coming right out and saying, hey, Doc Manhattan's the big bad guy this time.
Yeah.
You know, Doc Manhattan's the new Darkseid or you know, the Anti-Monitor or something like that. You know, they're just saying, hey, Doc Manhattan's got something to do with this.
Yeah.
And hang on, strap in, let's go for a ride to find out.
But it was a classic way of showing that visually. They didn't come out and say and show, you don't see a big picture of Doc Manhattan. You
right.
know,
you don't see like this omni... like
present
evil, I am Dr. Manhattan, I am here to destroy you all. I don't think it's gonna be that. I think it's gonna be a Shades of Grey storyline.
I hope so. If they continue what they've done, just there's vague visual relation to Watchmen in some areas, so you get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not in your face and obvious.
You know, I'm gonna say this, and something I haven't said in a long time, bravo DC, bravo.
I clap my hands if I wasn't holding a baby.
Yes, yes. He's holding a baby. I'm not, so. But here we go, Dallas. I want to show you something else that's coming out of Rebirth. Something a little fun, a little crazy, okay? And I turned into a freaking child because of
this. I'm kind of excited.
Okay? Here we go. Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, issue number one.
Scooby-Doo Apocalypse.
So,
what?
They're not just playing with the heavy, hardcore DC stuff. They're also redoing some other things. DC has control of some Warner Brother properties. And
that's a Jim Lee cover that doesn't even look like Jim Lee. It looks awesome, though.
Now, as I said, Hanna-Barbera, DC, you know, all these things DC has control of, okay?
Because you're right, Warner Brothers.
Right, right, right. So, along with the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, which was very fun, very modernized, Scooby-Doo was explained as having, like, part of an intelligent dog experiment. Shaggy's kind of this hipster, you know, dirtbag. I'm not sure if I really like him yet or not.
He's got the hipster mustache, though. Look at that.
The mustache and beard and everything.
I bet you that's a craft beer in his pouch.
Oh, yeah, totally craft beer in his pouch, you know. But here's the one that I really celebrated and thought was absolutely freaking hilarious. And this is Hanna-Barbera, Wacky Raceland.
Oh, my gosh. Is this like the races with all the Hanna-Barbera characters? That
Wacky
used to do?
Racers?
Yeah.
Yep.
With like Muttley. And...
Yep. That is Dick Dastardly.
What?
Muttley. Penelope Pitstop. Yep. They're
okay.
All here.
So, guys, if you're listening to this, we have pictures up on the blog or on our website of this book. But if you're listening on iTunes or something, just go Google Wacky Raceland number one. Wacky Raceland.
Basically, the concept is that the Wacky Raceland characters, classic groupings, the apocalypse has happened, and the announcer, air quoting the announcer, is some kind of like otherworldly entity that has given these people sentient cars.
It's Doc Manhattan, isn't it? It's Doc Manhattan.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. No indication that it's Doc Manhattan on this one. So they've been given these sentient cars, and they are racing to the finish, and whoever wins the race goes to Utopia, the last bastion of humanity. So, you know, what you end up with is Penelope Pit Stop looking very – well, everybody looks at very Mad Max-esque race through the wasteland. Penelope Pit Stop in this pink jumpsuit. Dick Dastardly, you know, with the Fu Manchu mustache. And then you got Muttley with a cybernetic dog exoskeleton. Yogi Bear apparently is just kind of this dude who's like got half a brain
wearing
a bear costume, and he's psychotic as hell. So it's an interesting book. Definitely going to give it a couple issues read. I don't know if I'll stick with it, but it's
it's crazy
to take such classically fun, goofy characters and turn them dark. I mean, you know, we've seen it before, but not with this group. Not with this group of characters.
I did not see that one coming, man. When the Scooby Apocalypse thing, when you just did that reveal, I was so shocked enough. But that is bananas.
Dude, they're swearing and stuff and everything. I mean, this is a nasty little book. You know, they are mean as crap to each other. So it's
so it's like Mad Max. I love it.
Oh yeah, it's totally Mad Max. Oh my gosh, it's totally hilarious. Mad Max style mutants.
It's
and
got
everything.
Three heads.
Yep,
that's awesome.
Dude's got three heads. You can see Penelope Pit Stop. Oh, there's the reveal page with everybody's names.
Oh
and
wow,
whatnot.
Yeah,
so,
the gruesome twosome.
Yep, the Red Baron's in here.
Rufus Roughcut and Sawtooth Buzzwagon. Yep. Lazy Luke and Blubber Bear.
Blubber Bear would be Yogi.
Gotcha. Sergeant Blast and Private Meekly. Professor Pat Pending is in a sweet helicopter. The Anti-Hill Mob. They had a bulletproof truck. Yeah, this is just bananas, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
This seems like such an odd, goofy thing to be excited over, but I was. And when I walked into the shop and they pulled it out for me, I squealed like a little girl. I really did. I was like, yes, it's here. I can't wait. One of the guys at the counter was like, really? You're giving that reaction for that book? I was like, listen, I like weird shit. This is weird.
I love that.
This is some real weirdness.
I love that.
I don't know why, but
so
I get such a kick
this.
Out of it.
Because this is not a book I'd pick up, but it needs to be seen and heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you need to be on the show to talk about this.
Yeah. This is the weird kind of stuff that everybody looks at and goes, oh, that's stupid. Why would they do? I look at it and go, wow. That is creepy and weird. Why would they do that? I have to look at this. This is a train wreck in action, and it is beautiful.
There's entertainment value in everything.
Everything.
Oh, that's great. That is awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely, guys. I'm telling you. I started to tell the story about Steve going to this thing with DC. Steve's explanation to me was I walked in ready to dislike it. By the time the whole thing was done, he said, I wasn't just drinking the Kool-Aid, I was making the Kool-Aid, okay? If DC pulls this off the way that they have talked about, it's going to be bang up, okay? It's going to be pretty cool. So hang on, strap in, let's go for a ride, kids.
It's already a completely original idea. I mean, it's already turn the whole thing on its head, you know,
yeah.
Introducing the Watchmen universe. So it's neat. It's different. I would give it a shot. Why the heck not?
It's definitely worth a shot. It's worth the ride. You know, is everything going to work? Of course not. Everything doesn't always work. But DC is, I think DC is willing to go somewhere and do something so uniquely different in this one that, you know, it's going to be something to watch for. Because, I mean, you got to think, DC has done some very right things over the years, okay? For one, television they do amazingly, okay? But when they did 52, one issue every week, and every single one of them was perfectly on time.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing, okay? Especially in a time frame where Marvel was doing Civil War, and screwed up and sent out, you know, last week's books late, along with that that week's books, which that week's books all started with the big reveal from last week.
So you get a lot of spoilers there.
Right? You know, you open up the new issue of something, and you were like, wait a minute, when did this happen? That was last week, and see, last week was late, so oops, sorry. So, you know, DC's really restructured itself in order to be able to take control of this situation and oversee it in a way that I think is going to be damn interesting.
I think so. Well, and it's nice that they're not afraid to take chances with even their biggest characters and their flagship titles. Mm-hmm. Because these are going to be the flagship titles now because they're redoing everything, just like they've done in the past with all the Crisis stories, especially right. The original Crisis. This is what it feels like. It's you're bringing back the multiverse. You're bringing all these things together. It's the opposite of what Crisis did.
Yeah.
Where they're condensing everything and bringing it down to clean, pure storytelling. This is like opening up that can of worms all over.
This is opening up. It's going, you know what? But acknowledge the fact that we have had all of these crazy storylines over the years that are almost uncontainable.
Yeah, these big unwieldy ideas, stories, there's so much continuity.
And you know, in a way, it's very much like what Marvel did with Battleworld. That whole thing took all those crazy freaking storylines, jammed them all into the same world for 5 minutes, and then blew them all out over the place.
But look, that's fun storytelling. The possibilities are literally endless at that point. Yep. You can write so much.
Now, the only problem I had with Marvel is that Battleworld became so overwhelming and just ridiculous. And in the end, it felt like nothing changed. So, I don't know. I'm still picking up Thor and Old Man Logan from Marvel. But I'll be honest with you, I haven't read them in like 3 or 4 issues. And that's usually the death knell to a comic book in my collection is I'll still pick up 3 or 4 issues and I'll sit down and I'll read those 3 or 4. And if it doesn't immediately grab me and I go, oh, crap, why wasn't I reading this whole time? It's done. I'm done. I will go into the shop. I'll take them off my list and they'll be done. And that would be the end of Marvel for me, actually, because that's the only things that I'm reading right now from Marvel is Old Man Logan and the Mighty Thor.
I'm not reading anything current from Marvel or DC. I've been going back and reading some old DC books from the 80s, Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, which has been really fun. One of these days in the future when I finish this run, I'm going to talk about it a lot. But it was, I think he started it in maybe 89. It's Doom Patrol issues 19 through issue 63. Which is kind of neat because Doom Patrol premiered in the year 1963, and I'm sure that was intentional.
I'm sure that was very, very intentional.
But my God,
with his writing style,
yeah. I mean, this run, Doom Patrol by Morrison, has been hailed as one of the greatest runs in comics in modern superhero comics for decades. It's been like that, and I'm finally getting around to read it. If you guys haven't read it, holy damn! Like, it's amazing. It's so fun because Morrison put so many wacky ideas into every single issue. They really were the strangest superhero group at the time. Anyway, I'm going to talk about it ad nauseum in the future, hopefully sit down, you know, do a whole review on the run. But anyway, that's what I've been reading, and it's so good. But,
nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's always nice to go back to those old books, or older books, because really, that's not that old.
It's funny, too. Oh, it's not. It's funny, too, because the writing is so ahead of its time, and the art, at least as far as I've gotten so far, is very of its time. And you can see the difference because we're used to, in modern books, you know, you're used to digital coloring. We're used to sometimes a very specific art style. Looking back at like the late 80s house style for DC, that's what Doom Patrol was, with some very flat colors. Oh, yeah. It's not bad by any means, you know, and it's subjective, of course. But compared to the very moody and color-oriented stuff that you see in this day and age, it's almost bright and cheery when it definitely, the content theme is not, but the colors and the art kind of is. So it's a weird dichotomy, but if you can get past that, oh my God, Grant Morrison's writing is amazing.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and take a music break. We'll be back in just a few. We'll be right back.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
All right, and we're back. We're back.
And bottle feeding.
Yeah, and it's lunchtime for Emily. She's killing it.
It's so funny because I realized as we were doing the first half of the episode, she's barely made a noise.
She's been really good.
Yeah.
Don't let her fool you. She's got her moments, man, but she's been good the past few days. And I think it's because, see, one of the things is I'm thinking because she was so young and her stomach is still developing that she would get bad stomach aches after she ate, so she'd usually scream and scream.
Yeah.
But she's getting a little older and she's doing better.
Just wait, dude. Before you know it, she's going to be 16. You're going to be completely gray. She's going to be driving you nuts. Wants a car.
I'll be completely gray by the time she's six.
Almost there now.
I know. No, it's funny you were saying she hasn't made a peep. She's literally laying in my arms, and like that whole first half of the episode, she's just staring up at me and up at Rook,
yep.
And just kind of enjoying our company. It was awesome.
Too funny. Yeah, you'd never know there was a baby comments. Here, guys. But seriously, there is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Well, look, there a massive event happened over this past weekend or so.
We're going.
Let's talk about this. Let's switch gears a little bit. I got a burp out of her. Let's talk about E3 2016.
Oh, man.
So
we're
changing it to the Electronics Something Expo, whatever it stands for. And let's talk about video games for a bit. Come on.
Oh, dude, so much crazy stuff went down. Amazing games being released. You know, as far as like the hardware thing, did you see the Xbox controller, the custom Xbox controllers?
No, I didn't.
Oh, like... I don't know why, but that's the thing everybody seems to be latching onto in my Facebook feed. Everybody's freaking out over it's like, ooh, look, I can make my Xbox controller look this color and this color. I'm like, really, guys? That's the thing you catch on?
Here's what I was a little disappointed to hear that these new VR systems are complete new systems rather than upgrades. Only because it seems like, I guess this new generation of systems has been out a number of years now, but it still seems like a generation shouldn't be over yet, right?
Well, I wouldn't think so, but here's the thing is you have to understand that Oculus is a VR system all into itself, and then there's I'm going to go dumb. I wish Chris was here.
I can't help you with this one.
There's another one that he was showing me footage of people playing, like Markiplier and I think Jacksepticeye were playing, where you actually have multi-camera setups. And you're in a environment, so like you actually can maneuver around in the VR environment. So the VR, I think, really is going to be the next step.
You're right, and I understand. And that's not just a simple add-on. That's completely new technology that they have to create.
And this comes from a complete couch gamer. Okay,
I
remember when I saw like the Xbox I or the PlayStation I
and the Kinect or even
The Wii. I looked at all that stuff and I went, why am I gonna get off my butt? Video games are my melt time.
It's
become
the lazy
one
hands.
With the couch. Like literally, I perfected the art of being able to play a video game while laying down and having the controller in like over my head or something. I lay in sleeping positions playing video games, you know, controller behind the head or whatever, you know. So the get up and move video game genre really blew past me. I didn't get it. But this new VR stuff is something different. It's changing the game to me.
It's completely immersive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, as far as game-wise, did you spot anything on the lists that really grabbed your attention?
Oh, there were a couple of them, but let's talk about the big one right now. And it was from Nintendo. Finally, we got footage of the new Legend of Zelda game, Breath of the Wild. And not only that, but I was super excited to find out that even though they're releasing it for their new video game system that's forthcoming, they're also releasing it for the Wii U. So I don't have to go out and buy another Nintendo system. I can just keep my Wii U and buy the new Zelda. Now, this game is awesome looking. Can we say that? Because of many reasons. The art style, it reminds me of Skyward Sword. It's very much like a watercolor painting, okay? The art style's fantastic. And Nintendo, they're kind of a closed company. They don't usually borrow a lot of game concepts and ideas from outside of Nintendo, especially for their main games. But this one, they're making the new Zelda an open world game, which is kind of unheard of for Nintendo. Because open
Not
world
really.
Games, well,
I mean, remember Zelda 64?
No, it was still any of the Zeldas.
It was contained. I mean, Zelda was kind of that original sandbox-esque game.
Yes, but not to this extent.
This is definitely
borrowing ideas from open world games at this age.
But it's a natural progression for Zelda. I mean, you had to go this way with the Zelda games. You had to.
Oh, I agree. I mean, they tried something completely different with Skyward Sword, and while I thought it was a great success, it was different. The game itself was a lot smaller. You only had a limited number of areas, and you repeated things, which was neat story-wise, but it was the antithesis of an open-world game. So they're finally smartening up and doing this. And my God, this game looks great, man. I'm so excited.
Now, see, it's funny because you say that, and then the big thing that was for me was, of course, God of War.
Oh, that looks beautiful.
The continuation of God of War is... Okay, God of War was the video game that made me buy a PlayStation, okay? I was Nintendo, Nintendo, Nintendo all the way. And I just refused to acknowledge anything beyond Nintendo. And then God of War came out, and I went, good God, this is brilliant. And from there, I realized that just PlayStation... It has so many different games available, so much different stuff going on. I've been a real PlayStation player for many years. Xbox, I just picked up on probably like 7-8 years ago, which my wife and I actually prefer Xbox many times because she prefers the larger controllers. They're easier in her hands. They're more comfortable to her. Game-wise, right now... Yeah, it's an older game at this point, but we're working our way through Diablo 3. Really, God of War looks so clean. The beard on Kratos' face is ridiculous.
The transition going, the story-wise, that now that you know he has another son, after the whole tragedy with his family. He's got a son that he's raising.
Yeah.
The way it's integrated into the gameplay is amazing.
And what I find fascinating is the Viking gods. He's going up against Valhalla.
Yeah, how awesome is that?
That is going to be nuts. Because, you know, let's face it, Kratos killed the Greek gods. Where is he supposed to go next? Everybody naturally assumed, Rome. Nope. Took him straight to
the Vikings.
Norse mythology. Let me tell you, this is going to be a goddamn bloodbath. It's going to be amazing, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, go online, go on YouTube, and check out the 10-minute gameplay trailer, and man, you will be blown away. The graphics alone are amazing.
Now,
she has pooped her diaper again.
Oh, yeah. Full diaper.
Live
and
on
with
air.
That, we're going to take a diaper break. And we're back from the poop break. I just was... talking with Dallas off air here, and I asked him if he had seen Detroit Becoming Human. He had not seen the preview yet, just sat down and watched it, and that is the standout above and beyond to me.
It looks incredibly interesting, just because you can do...
Did she just poop again?
Yes, it's okay.
That's hilarious!
Wow.
I personally think that Detroit is going to be the one, the game that takes it all.
It's a neat concept, and the idea that you can kind of change history or go back and, you know, decide how you want the story to go is kind of neat.
The choice variation is limitless, it looks like.
Yeah,
so that's going to be the one that we really, I think, is going to be... That's the game that stood out for me.
Very cinematic, too.
Yeah,
the scenes that I was looking at. It's really cool. Okay, so we've been kind of talking about the future games, you know, between VR and then the really cool ideas that Detroit Become Human has kind of shown us.
Wait, let me guess. You want to talk about the remake?
I do. There's actually... there's like two remakes, and one of them I don't think they announced at E3. So I want to get what you think about this.
Well,
so basically,
we knew the Final Fantasy VII remake was coming.
Not even that one. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. What are you talking about?
Okay, no, there's a difference here. The Final Fantasy VII remake is an actual, hands-down remake of the game from the ground up.
Yes.
But
they completely took the same storyline,
yeah,
remodeled everything with modern graphics.
Yeah, it's a new engine. So, okay, what I'm talking about, so there's two games coming out, two of my very favorite games of all time, okay? They're getting upgrades, HD upgrades, graphical upgrades. These two games are Skyrim and Final Fantasy XII. So, they're being re-released. Here's the thing, okay? Final Fantasy XII was originally released on PS2. It's getting an HD upgrade. Now, that's kind of it's in vogue these days, older games getting an upgrade. Now, also, Skyrim, which is just last generation, PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I kind of question that needs an upgrade.
Have you seen the video?
No, I haven't seen the video, obviously.
I need to show you the video. The graphical upgrade is huge, right?
Okay.
I'm wondering, though, does that justify them sticking a $60 price tag on a game and reselling it?
My problem with that is Skyrim, and people are going to go absolutely batshit right now. I apologize. This is my opinion.
Am I going to go batshit?
This is my opinion, and y'all can suck it. Skyrim wasn't worth $60 to begin with. Skyrim was boring. I beat it, done with it, bored with it. Okay?
But you beat it, but you're not, you know, I beat it.
I built two houses. I had a couple of kids. What else was there supposed to be?
You can do whatever the hell you want. I have 140 hours into that game, and I could spend another 200 hours just having fun with it. But that's to each his own. So here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
Slapping a makeover on a game and then reselling it to the public.
For $60?
Yeah. That doesn't justify a full price tag.
Yeah, but musicians do the same damn thing. They remix an album or remaster an album, and they slap a $20 price tag on that.
Yeah, that's 20 bucks. We're talking 60 bucks here, and not that I agree with what musicians are doing as well. It's a weird thing.
I really don't think it's worth. Of course, I'm a cheap bastard. I buy most of my games used.
Well, you buy older generation, or you play older generation.
I play older
games
generation games a lot. You know, I am a Nintendo original NES fanatic. 64, Super Nintendo.
I'm an SNES guy.
I'm still hunting for a copy of Shadowrun at a decent price tag.
I love that game so much.
We used to play it together, dude.
So much.
I love that game.
Yes.
I won't pay $90 for the damn thing. I'm sorry, I won't. And I prefer to hunt for it. I don't know what it is. I'm mentally unstable. I know that I can find it on Amazon for $20 or some crap like that, people. Don't bother me with that, I know.
Yeah.
I would rather hunt the stores until I find it.
Yeah, but that's that comic book culture mentality that we
have.
That we talked about a million times in the past about back issues, searching, going from store to store, finding that one issue that you've been looking for years.
Right. There's something about that interaction to with the store owner, with the people in the store. You know, when somebody finds out you've been looking for that particular piece for so long. So yes, I am an older generation gamer. This new gen gaming stuff is gorgeous, don't get me wrong. Some of the storylines are beautiful. Here's my biggest problem with it. Couch co-op. I love couch co-op. My wife and I are couch co-op players. You know? Not split screen either.
Do you remember Bomberman for the Super Nintendo?
Oh, heck yeah.
Like, you and, like, four of our friends come over to my house on weekends, and we'd have, like, my mom would make us lunch, and we would just, like, have tournaments for hours.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same with the original Mario Kart.
I completely sucked at
that
game.
That's what you mean
Mario
by couch
Kart,
co-op.
I was better. Well, particularly for my wife and I, we prefer games like Champions of Norrath, Return to Arms, Baldur's Gate.
The same idea, though, where you're multiplayer next to each other playing together.
As I mentioned, we're working our way through Diablo 3 right now on Xbox. These are the games we like, and these are the games we're not seeing much of anymore. We've played Badlands. It was fun. We veered away from it because it is a split screen, and it does get annoying after a while. You know, limiting your viewpoint is aggravating to us.
So
we want to be able to see what we can see at the same time. Now, on the flip side of that, we have a pair of friends who, husband and wife gamers, they actually have two TVs and two video game systems in their living room. And the two of them play together. To me, it's goddamn brilliant. I just can't afford it.
We used to do Halo tournaments with a friend of mine where we'd have four Xboxes hooked up together.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was three Xboxes and like 12 players.
Yep.
All in the same house just playing together.
Yep.
That's fun, but it's...
Yeah, you know, it's an expense.
A company that still is doing these couch co-op games, although the games themselves might not be up your alley, is Nintendo. The Wii U's got some fantastic games,
right?
Like Smash Brothers,
especially
Mario
if
Kart.
You're 12.
Yeah, well,
you know, I'm sorry, Nintendo does not appeal to me. I want action. I want adventure. I don't want Disneyland. Okay, that's what I. Nintendo to me is Disney. Video game wise,
that's a fair assessment.
It's for kids.
It doesn't mean
it's for
bad,
kids,
though.
No. Certainly, it has its place, and it has its gamers. It has its adult gamers, people who don't play the way that I do. I mean, I have a more serious aspect to.
I want a
good storyline. I want good action, and Nintendo doesn't deliver that.
Both kinds, though, and I don't.
They deliver party games. They
yeah.
deliver fun. Yay! Let's, you know. My wife and I want to be able to sit down and run through and just destroy, hack, slash, you know, have a good storyline, you know, stuff like that. We don't want to, you know, spend five nights playing a game of whack-a-mole, you know.
Whereas I enjoy both kinds of games, but when I play a serious sit-down kind of game, like I'm currently going through Metal Gear Solid 5,
oh, yeah.
I love those games, but that's more of a single player kind of experience.
Oh.
If I'm playing a party game, I do like the shorter games like Super Mario Kart, getting together with friends, having a few beers, having some food, and just banging out a couple games that you don't have to think too hard about.
No, if you're doing a party and you want party games, yes, that's Nintendo. But as I said, my wife and I want co-op player games where we can fight our way through something together.
And you're right,
you know,
those are few and far between.
We want a storyline for two. We don't want, you know, like, just take, for example, BioShock, The Last of Us, God of War. These are fantastic games with fantastic storylines. However, they are one-player games, you know.
Well, unfortunately, the majority of multiplayer games for the past decade have been taken over on, you play them online.
And first-person shooters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, mostly, and, well, MMOs also. But that's not... But the problem with that is you're playing with strangers or you're playing with somebody that's not sitting
right.
next to you, unfortunately.
Right. I guess, really, for us, what the two of us want is an MMO couch.
Right.
You know?
I see your dilemma, because
you know,
they
a
are...
A couch-styled MMO, it just doesn't exist. So, outside of, like, Diablo.
So if any of our listeners can get on that and create a game...
Yeah, yeah. Start programming that for me, huh? All right, appreciate
it. I understand that, because it is difficult to come by things like that. You know, now that I think about it, you don't see a lot of games like that, which is a shame.
It is. It truly is. I mean,
personally, I hate playing online games because, number one, I'm not very good at video games, so playing a kid half my age that's twice as good as me doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
And number two, I don't like to play with strangers. I'd rather play with my friends and people next to me.
I despise playing online. I always end up on the server with the 12-year-olds that cuss like sailors,
yeah.
have, you know, apparently had more sexual conquests than myself or any of my friends together, especially with your mothers. You know, the vileness of playing online with unknown people is just disheartening. And I don't care to do it. I would rather play single person storyline than have to get online and play with somebody.
Yes.
Yep. So.
Completely agree with you there. Completely agree with you.
So.
And that's why I don't play that many modern video games. That's probably one of the reasons you play older games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so. So, switching gears here, we've
yeah.
got E3.
Which I think we went over the biggest announcements or the ones that matter in our world.
Right.
So,
E3 also coincided with Warcraft. The release of the movie, which the movie, I don't even know what it did at the box office or anything. I personally am not going to go see it because I'm not a Warcraft fan. I'm a huge Starcraft fan. I love Blizzard's franchise as far as Starcraft goes. I never got into Warcraft. The movie itself hopefully is doing very good so that, you know, we can continue to get some cool stuff going on there. But what about other comic book movies? Comic book video game style movies. Let's talk for a minute about some of the stuff that's coming out soon with Suicide Squad, for one.
Okay.
Have you been paying attention to all the previews and everything going on there?
No, I've been in a tunnel because I saw the first trailer that came out and it didn't really appeal to me, so I just stopped paying attention.
All right. So there's been a big debate online over Jared Leto playing the Joker and what kind of stylized Joker he looks like. The facial tattoos, the gold grill, the fancy clothes, the tattoos and everything. Now there's a lot of theory going on about him not being Joker.
Really?
Instead, he's Robin turned Joker. So, you know, and people are lining up, like, scars on the shirtless Joker with scars on the Robin costume from Batman versus Superman and et cetera, et cetera.
Wait, Robin was in Batman versus Superman?
No, but the Robin costume was. Oh. Spray painted with Spoiler. Ha, ha, ha. So, people are saying that the Joker got Robin and converted him. Here's the problem I have with some of these concepts. I don't know that everybody was thinking that far ahead. And if they were, bravo, brilliant job, you should be. Here's the part of the theory that I fall into believing the most about. Ben Affleck's Batman was an older Batman in his 50s.
Is this supposed to be the same Batman from the Bale movies?
No. From what I understand, it is not. Okay? So, if Batman, by Ben Affleck, is in his 50s, let's say, okay? Jared Leto is in his, what is
30s,
it? Probably. Early 30s?
Yeah.
So how is this Joker, what was he, a teenager? A toddler fighting Batman?
The
age variation is probably one of the most interesting parts of the Joker theory. With Suicide Squad.
It's an interesting theory because even if, like you said, they didn't think this far ahead and the insinuation in the Batman vs. Superman movie was just that Robin was killed by Joker, maybe, mm-hmm. they could still retroactively go back and use that
Absolutely.
For this Robin as Joker theory.
Quite frankly, I think at this point, if DC doesn't, it's a bad, they missed a point here because it really, how fantastic would it be to not just have one Joker?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got this messed up, crazy Joker.
He's become a legacy character.
Yeah,
now. You've got people
character.
Filling his boots.
Which is happening in the comic books. So why not let it happen in the movies? And then later on, if Affleck gets his own Batman movie like everybody's talking about, then you can cast somebody huge into the role as the Joker. Don't get me wrong, Jared Leto is huge and he's a fantastic actor. Does amazing work. But I think we can do a different Joker.
Oh yeah.
So that's my Suicide Squad spiel.
Okay, interesting. I like that. See, I've never read the Suicide Squad books. They've been around for a while.
Oh yeah.
I'm not familiar with the characters except for Deadshot. I read them back in Teen Titans, you know, Judas Contract, all that stuff.
Right.
And I remember Harley Quinn, that character from the old Batman cartoon when we were kids, but the other characters, I really have nothing in.
Well, you've got Killer Croc, you've got Katana. I mean, you've got a variety of different DC baddies that, you know, have been around, like the Justice League and the Titans and stuff like that, and Batman. So you've got a variety of different bad guys that are coming into this that are already known to most DC fans. And then you've got some unknown characters, people that nobody pays attention to. You know, I think the whole Captain Boomerang being a part of it is the most hilarious goddamn thing of it all.
I love that they're taking a chance this early in their movie cycle. And Warner Brothers is releasing Suicide Squad, an all-villain film, with mostly unknown characters unless you're steeped in DC lore, right? Like, of course, when Suicide Squad came out, the comic book version, that was, I could be wrong about this, but I'm assuming it was in the 80s. That being said, DC and continuity had been around for decades before that, you know? This is a little different, where there's only been a couple DC movies, really, and the only tentpoles that people know are the big ones, like Batman and Superman. So, to come out with Suicide Squad this early, it's kind of surprising, ballsy, and I do like it. And it could turn out to be a good movie.
I think it's going to turn out to be a fantastic movie, and quite frankly, when you put into comparison what where they started as far as the DC movies, DC really screwed up a lot.
Am I the only person that liked Man of Steel?
I enjoyed Man of Steel, but I didn't find it that good.
I liked it for... Okay, look, these movies, I take with a grain of salt. Every single comic book movie. None of them, I don't expect, you know, I don't expect to go in and see Shakespeare. This was a summer blockbuster. I don't care or take issue with how they treated Superman. I just had fun at the movies, you know?
Yeah.
In that respect, it succeeded.
Well, and that's one of the things that a lot of people forget to do at these movies. Is
have
you know,
fun.
Is have some fun and, you know, realize that everything in these books for the last, what?
50 plus years?
Right. Cannot be jammed into a 2-hour freaking movie. You know? Man of Steel, I've never been a huge Superman fan anyway. So, you know, Man of Steel was... It was what it was. It was a Superman movie. It was a movie about a character that I really don't give too much of a crap about.
But he's a cultural icon. That's all you really need
absolutely.
To know.
He is a cultural icon just like Captain America.
Yes.
Who to me is more of the icon. In my life, Cap is an icon. Superman is, you know, yeah, I get it. People like him. They dig him. He's, you know, whatever. But, you know, Superman's just not the end-all be-all for me. Batman's not the end-all be-all either. I understand that these characters are, you know...
Pinnacles. Like
yeah.
I said.
Oh, yeah, pinnacles. Absolutely. Yeah. They are pinnacles of the DC universe, character building. Everything revolves basically around the Trinity. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. You know, and I get it.
Oh, I thought it was Batman, Superman, and Blue Beetle.
Oh, totally. No. It's Danger Bug.
Booster Gold?
Booster Gold!
Danger Bug, Ambush Bug.
Oh,
Plastic
Man. God.
Oh,
so funny. But, you know, so that movie was okay. It was certainly better than, what was that horrible hunk of crap?
Superman Returns?
Ugh, yeah, that was not good. The Bale Batman movies were fun for what they were, but somebody forgot that there was continuity to happen, that there was, you know, some building to go on. They literally threw everything at the wall each and every time, hoping that they got it all in because they didn't know if they would get another movie.
I'm pretty sure publicly Christopher Nolan didn't want to do a third movie, you know?
Right.
He done Begins. Batman Begins was successful, so he did what I think is his magnum opus was Dark Knight. Fantastic movie.
Dark Knight.
He had to fulfill a contract and do another movie.
Yeah, Dark Knight was absolutely the end-all be-all for that franchise.
Oh my God, yes, it was. So good.
Rise was a horrible, horrible movie.
Well, that's subjective. I didn't enjoy it that much. It was okay, but I wouldn't call it a bad movie.
Oh, I
it
would.
Had a good director and good actors.
I would call it a horrible movie. I mean, let's face it. You know, you have this Batman movie set that's based in reality, and they're monologuing on the steps of the city, of City Hall at one point. I mean, that part right there is... You know, it was bad enough. Bane's voice took me out quite badly. His dialogue was fantastic.
Yes.
The voice was horrid.
His voice grew on me. It really did because it was so different that I enjoyed it. But that first scene of the film was worth the price of admission alone, I thought. And that was probably the best part of the whole movie was the airplane scene in the very beginning of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was a fantastic scene. I mean, if we could sit here and break down Rise... scene by scene and argue the points of and the validity and the necessity of different parts of it. But as far as it was predictable, it was dull. I did not enjoy Rise whatsoever.
I wonder if that comes from a director that wasn't too interesting. You know,
I kind of feel that it does. Yeah. I really do, because he was so loyal to his concepts in the first two movies. You know, the monologuing on the steps of City Hall. Everybody else around you is fighting and going at it. And Bane and Batman take a moment out to monologue.
I really want to really swerve and sidetrack because of what you just said, but I don't want to throw us off if you're getting to a point.
No, go for it. What?
The monologuing, okay. Number one, that was pure comic booky cheesiness. For lack of a better word, right?
From a series of movies that refuse to be comic book shtick. From a series of movies that made the point to base everything in reality.
You're preaching to the choir, buddy.
And then they throw this comic book, you know, very baseline comic book concept of everyone else is fighting, but we're going to monologue for a minute.
So here I take issue with something in a very similar vein. Finally finished the first season of Daredevil on Netflix.
Oh,
Did you see it?
I've seen both. I've seen both seasons and Jessica Jones.
That's fine. So I haven't seen the second season. So the first season of Daredevil. Now here's a show that takes itself very seriously. It looks at itself very seriously. It's grounded more or less
dark,
in reality.
It's gritty.
It's dark.
It's...
To me, it's out of the same playbook as The Dark Knight. Okay.
Yes.
That's great. Then there's just these scenes that are almost obligatory in a show like this, unfortunately, that take me right out of it. There's only a couple big fight scenes in the show. A couple notable ones that I can think of. One major one, the final episode. Spoilers. There's a major fight between Matt and Fisk. And Murdoch gets a new glittery red Daredevil outfit. And this scene, the way it plays out is just so over the top. So cheesy, for lack of a better word, that it doesn't seem to fit in the show. And it took me out. And it actually made me think a little less of the season, which isn't fair on my part, I know. But it actually took away some of the integrity of what the show was doing. There's this whole big part of the whole season, including the final episode, where they're pointing out, we've got to take this guy down using the wall, this and that, you know, and they do a good job of showing that. And then it all comes down to this superhero fight in the alley between Kingpin and Daredevil. And to me, it was just so out of place and so left of what they were trying to do in the show that it just threw me out. And that's what reminds me of the whole monologue on the steps in Dark Knight Rises.
Okay, here's my retort to what you just said as far as that goes. That was a necessary scene and a necessary battle because through the entire season, Matt and everyone are trying to fight with inside the boundaries of the legal system to take Fisk down. A man who is not going to work inside the legal system. So, in the end, for one, it would be anticlimactic for them to just show up and be like, oh, we have a warrant for your arrest, you know. But also, it needs to show that the necessity of what Matt is doing, because he is fighting against people who are outside of the law, who will not follow decent common law and human thinking. Matt is a necessity. The Daredevil is a necessity, and what he is doing is taking him down any way he can and keeping them there through legal means.
Okay. That's in that context.
That is my look at that.
That's totally justifiable. I get that. And that's okay, and I can get on board with that. That's fine with me. I think I take issue mostly with just the visual spectacle and how it was executed. For me, and it's just me, not that I could direct a better scene, but it just seems so over the top, the fight itself. Just the poses, the flips, it just didn't seem to fit with the show. Now, I can see the point you're getting at, that Matt's got to confront him face to face. And that's why,
right,
man,
so,
it is obligatory.
So the actual, the choreography,
the choreography
of the fight is
the,
what you're taking
a,
taking up.
A, the choreography, and B, the suit, which to me is cheesy as hell. But that's neither here nor there.
The Daredevil suit is beautiful.
I love
that suit.
This is a comic book show, and I get it. You got to have that. But for me, I like the whatever little black mask he had over his head for the majority of the season. To me, that fits that fit the show because it was grounded in reality.
I'm so hurt by the fact that you don't like his costume. It's gorgeous. It is an absolutely gorgeous costume.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it doesn't fit the show, at least for me. It's what I'm getting out of the show.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I just...
But don't get me wrong. That was a great freaking show, and what a spectacular season. I do feel like Daredevil is what that show Gotham was trying to do but never succeeded doing.
Oh, what season of Gotham are you on?
Ellie and I got about 3/4 through the first season, and we gave up because it was...
Oh, no. You need to go back. You need to go back. Go. Start again.
It gets better.
Are
you sure? Because that show... And listen, I don't want to be an a-hole, but that show was horrible.
Listen, anybody that is watching Gotham, that, like, I'm not completely up with the newest season yet, but anybody who's watching Gotham right now, I need you on the message boards and telling Dallas he's got to get back into it. Rise of the Villains, fantastic.
Does the act... The acting is horrible on that show.
I mean, come on. Okay, all right. So you're not attacking the premise of the show or
no.
It's the actual actor's ability that
you're attacking? Yeah, the characters are fine. The cinematography is pretty good too, but the freaking acting is so hammy, dude. I can't get over it. That's just me. I'm a stickler for certain things, and I think I look for different things in TV shows, I guess.
All right, the guy that plays Penguin bugs the crap out of me. I don't like his acting, okay?
You know who I hated? It's Fish Mooney. What's her face? Will Smith's wife.
Oh, God.
It was so over the top. Ugh. She ruined the show. I think she's the reason Ellie and I stopped watching that show.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I love the guy playing Jim. I love Jim Gordon. Okay?
Remember him on the OC?
No, because I never watched that goddamn thing.
Shit.
But, no, I feel that the actor that plays Jim Gordon is fantastic. And then Bullock.
Yes, Bullock is great.
Bullock is the one almost carrying the show in many ways.
I agree. Bullock is my favorite part of that show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. He's my favorite part of the show. But I'm telling you, the first season really kind of just, like, the whole first season should have been more the first 5 episodes. Okay, they should have condensed much of that into the first 5 episodes.
I can get on that.
The second season, and what are we in, third season now for it? I don't remember offhand. But now you're starting to see the rise of the villains, and you're starting to see what Gotham is becoming because of these villains. You just recently met Mr. Freeze.
I get that a show needs time to get on its feet and find its own identity, and I get that, and I'm sure the show's fine, but man, those first 10, 12 episodes just...
Yeah, they were rough. They were rough. I won't argue that with you. But I'm telling you, keep going.
All right.
Keep going.
Maybe I will.
Now, have you watched Supergirl?
No.
Oh, fantastic. Anybody who disagrees can kiss my ass. Supergirl is fun. It's campy. It's goofy. It's everything that I feel it needed to be.
Okay? I like that. All right.
You know, and, like, I had a lot of people like, oh, it's so goofy, it's so campy. I'm like, yeah, that's why it's brilliant, you
freaking Supergirl.
You know? I mean, The Flash was kind of a little campy and goofy, but gets real dark and serious. Supergirl never escapes the campiness to me. It gets a little serious, but still goes right back to campy and goofy. And I think that's brilliant. It's easy watching is what it is.
To be honest, it's refreshing that there are still shows out there like that, because I'll tell you what, man, you know, we watch a lot of serious dark shows like Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm.
and that show Preacher, although going in knowing it was going to be a little...
Oh, knowing Preacher was going to be a Preacher.
However, hear me out really quick, and I won't go on a long dissertation about Preacher or anything, but relative to Supergirl... Going in, I knew it was going to be violent, bloody, but the comic does it in such an over-the-top way, I was hoping it would be almost campy, fun, throwing guts around, but in a fun way. But the show has such a dark overtone to it, it's almost menacing, that it's hard for me to get on board.
Really?
Only because, and you know what, it's a fantastic show, and I'm going to keep watching it. But I have too many shows that I watch that take themselves too seriously, and I love them all, but I need a lighthearted show.
See, then that's what you... Then you really need to go and watch Supergirl, yeah. Because it's lighthearted, it's fun. Like I said, it has its dark moments because it needs its dark moments for plot development and character developments.
Or to show how light the light moments are.
Yes, exactly. But it's... I personally think that Supergirl is beautifully and brilliantly executed. And, you know, the thing that pissed me off the most, I live tweeted the first two episodes, I think, and following the hashtags and everything, I find this to be the defining thing behind why the show was so good. Every single tweet I saw from a man hated it. Every single woman loved it. Okay? So, like, at that point, I went, show's a success. Good job.
Yeah.
Good job.
They hit their demographic.
You know, because a show like that, I mean, it's Supergirl. Guys aren't supposed to be, like, totally, yeah, Supergirl, man. That's, like, my favorite character ever. You know?
What if it was?
Supergirl is supposed to be an empowering character to women readers, you know, and viewers. So for that many, like I said, that first two episodes, I saw so many tweets from female viewers that were like, oh man, this show is awesome. I love this. It's great. And then like so many guys were like, oh, this sucks. I don't get it. You know, like I said, to me, I looked at that and went, well, this is a home run.
Nice. Okay.
So, right. Not to mention Martian Manhunter. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Just got you there, didn't I?
Nice.
Yeah.
I had a little jaw drop.
He's in the series, nice. And he looks fantastic.
Nice.
Red Tornado as well.
I like that.
Yep.
So
there you go. There's a little bit of spoiler on who's in it for you to draw you in and suck you in and make you watch it a little more. So,
cool. All right. All right. I like it.
So as far as Preacher goes, brutal.
It's definitely fun.
It's fun, but it's
Yeah. It's pretty true to the characters, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a lot different than the book, which you would totally expect, and it's fine by me. Like I said, I don't know. Maybe it was the art and the humor that Garth Ennis would inject in it, and the art that the way Steve Dillon drew it. But it was always very over the top, very tongue in cheek. There was plenty of profanity and crazy themes and brutality, but it just felt fun. I mean, you know, you read The Boys. You know how Garth Ennis can be fun.
I read The Boys. I've read Punisher. I've read Ghost Rider, Crossed. You know.
So you know how Garth Ennis writes.
Garth
you know
Ennis has issues.
Yeah.
Garth Ennis has some serious goddamn issues, okay? That's all I can say.
I guess the
brilliant writer, but he's got, dude, yeah, I don't think I want to, like, spend the night at Garth Ennis's house.
I guess the point being, he doesn't take his writing, he takes it seriously, but he doesn't, you know.
He is very dark, very demented, very sexual, and then it gets real campy and weird at the strangest moments.
Because he's having fun doing it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I imagine, like, there's a sex dungeon in Garth Ennis's basement that has clowns running around. Okay?
He looks like such a, like, unassuming guy, too. Did you see him?
Yeah.
He was on Talking Preacher?
Yeah. Yeah, he's very unassuming looking, but like I said, you know, seriously, there's a clown-filled sex dungeon in Garth Ennis's basement. I'm just saying this. I don't know this to be fact, but I'm pretty sure that's a fact.
Oh, God, that's awesome.
Well, let's talk about the future of some of the Netflix shows.
I didn't watch all of Jessica Jones. I saw the first two episodes.
Jessica Jones, new Daredevil, that's good. But announced are the two that they're targeting.
Power Man and Iron Fist. Tell me they're doing Power Man and Iron Fist.
They are going to be doing The Defenders. Luke Cage is getting his own show.
Power Man!
But beyond that, they have announced Punisher is going to be getting his own.
Good. And that's the guy, I can't remember the actor's
name,
but
the
guy
that
plays
Shane from Walking Dead, yes.
Great actor.
Season 2, Daredevil, Punisher, goddamn tears. Okay. The graveyard scene is...
Say no more.
I cried like a baby, okay?
And I do know that they're doing something with... I'm assuming it's the Danny Way Iron Fist.
I don't know.
It was... And I don't know if this was confirmed, but I'm pretty sure it was confirmed that the actor that plays Loras Tyrell from Game of Thrones is going to be Iron Fist.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Well, now, as far as Netflix goes with other shows, there's talk about two other characters getting their own show, one of which has had a television show already and three movies.
The Hulk?
Blade.
Oh.
Yes. So.
Well, Wesley Snipes is out of jail, so.
Yeah. Well, personally, I feel like the guy who did the Blade in the television series was fantastic. So, but they're talking about doing a Blade television series or Netflix series. And here's the one that bugs me and I'm not too sure about. Ghost Rider.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yep.
Really?
Wow. It's dark. It's gritty. It definitely could fit into this Netflix show universe.
It feels like it would be better as a television show, too. If they do it like they did Daredevil and take it seriously, I feel like it could work.
I just don't know about the CGI for the transformation.
Ooh, yeah,
that bugs me. I don't want to see that done in a campy, goofy, you know, we ran out of money kind of way. So, I'll certainly embrace it and watch it.
If they just get a dedicated stuntman that every scene he just lights his head on fire and runs around for like 30 seconds, then you nailed it.
Done. We're all good. Yeah. Next one.
Cut. Set print. No, that would be interesting, and I like the idea they're getting the Defenders together.
Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't they get a... What about... Wasn't there going to be a Captain Marvel? Is she going to be somewhere? Was she a Defender or was she an Avenger?
She's an Avenger.
Oh, okay. So maybe she's going to be in the movies. Huh?
Well, supposedly she's going to have her own movie. So, I know Ronda Rousey was very much interested in
playing. There were a couple different ones in talks.
Yeah, I forget who it is, but there's a front runner for it right now, and I forget what her name is. I don't recall, honestly. You know, I'm one of those, like, let's wait until Marvel actually announces something before we say, hey, this is going to happen.
That's why, I threw out that actor for Iron Fist, and I'm assuming that it has been announced, like I said, but I'm not sure, and I don't want to throw around rumors just insubstantially, so.
Well, that's exactly what we do. We fact check everything here.
Clearly, I mean, we're the peak of professionalism here. Peak of professionalism. Podcast with absolute direction. Got a baby on the show.
162 episodes later, and we don't fact check shit.
Half drunk every other episode.
Maybe you are, not me anymore.
True.
Oh man. Well, let's talk one more thing real quick because we hit on the fact that the actor for Game of Thrones is coming into the Marvelverse. Let's talk about some of the other actors from Game of Thrones.
Rumor time.
So, the actress that plays Arya Stark,
Maisie Williams,
is rumored to be entering, well, it's not really the Marvel universe, it is, but it's not owned by Marvel.
It's the X-Men universe.
And now I can't wait to see Dallas's reaction. There's talk that there's finally going to be a New Mutants.
Oh, and freaking G, movie. I'm so excited about this. No, well, here's the thing. Rook dropped this bomb on me last night. He shot me a text.
I dropped that bomb on you 2 days ago. You just only saw it last night.
Oh, I'm an a-hole like that. He sent me a link. And, yeah, apparently Maisie Williams is rumored to be cast for Rain Sinclair, Wolfsbane, of the New Mutants. And I read a little bit of the link, and they were knocking out Sunspot, Cannonball, Ilyana Rasputin, Magic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the original characters. I could not be more excited as New Mutants, as a lot of people that have listened to the show know, is one of my favorite comics and was one of my very favorite comics growing up. I slabbed all my New Mutants books into a big hardcover. I am freaking crazy over the New Mutants, and I'm
Dallas
super excited.
All about the New Mutants. So well, I mean, I don't know about you, but we talked about this on the Daredevil episode. When Negasonic Teenage Warhead's trench coat came off and you saw that X-Men costume, okay, it's taken how many goddamn years, how many X-Men freaking movies before some costume designer finally opened up a goddamn comic book and went, hey, look at this uniform. And they put it on her, and it screamed New Mutants the second I saw it.
I'm not going to lie, it was freaking amazing. Let's not forget, let's not downplay X-Men First Class. They wore the original yellow and blue jumpsuits. They didn't quite nail it as well as Negasonic's.
No.
But it was pretty good, dude.
Eh.
Banshee looked great.
Banshee looked fantastic, but Negasonic's uniform, it didn't just scream X-Men, it screamed New Mutants.
That whole friggin' Deadpool movie was so good.
Oh, the
scene, the X, it screamed X-Men when you had Colossus, in the mansion with Negasonic, like just the little scenes of him eating his cereal, watching TV. I loved it. Like, it was classic X-Men.
Now, the fact that they made him look exactly the way he should look.
So good.
I mean, come on. Dude, Deadpool is now the point to shoot for. And granted, by the way, guys, this comes from two dudes who have not seen Apocalypse yet. So true. We don't know how good or bad that is.
I'm pretty sure it's not as good as Deadpool. it's a freaking X-Men movie, dude.
I can confidently sit here and say Deadpool was a better movie. I think.
Yes.
Maybe? I mean, you gotta understand, I love Apocalypse. Apocalypse is my favorite freaking X-Men character. Possibilities and alterations of him. The Age of Apocalypse, one of the greatest X-Men storylines ever told. It's brilliant stuff. Now, from the minute they showed Apocalypse on that one scene looking like goddamn Ivan Ooze, okay, I mean, it was horrible. I never once had that, oh god, this is going to be so screwed up, watching the premieres for Daredevil or
Deadpool.
Not once in Deadpool's development did I see anything that made me go, oh, well, they fucked this up.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right. I still want to see that movie just to see Nightcrawler and Scott and Jean, and it'll be
fun. Already seen Nightcrawler. Scott and Jean, now that, once again, another Game of Thrones actors.
Sophie Turner.
Yep. Scott and Jean look interesting.
Havoc's in this one, I think, still.
Havoc is still there.
I like the actor that plays Havoc. He's been in
the fact that they finally shave Xavier's goddamn head. Thank you. Finally.
It'll be an interesting watch. I think I'm going to wait till DVD for this one, though, you know?
Yeah, honestly, I want to see it, but I'm not rushing to the theaters to see it.
I was... You know, I've never been...
I've been to the theater like 3 times in the last month, okay? And I haven't seen X-Men yet. You know there's something not right with that, okay?
I think I'm always overly critical of X-Men movies because I was such a fan of X-Men when I was young. Mm. And I've never really enjoyed any of the X-Men movies. I liked, and I feel like we differ on this, but I liked First Class. And that was kind of the only X-Men movie I actually liked.
First Class was okay.
Yeah. I didn't like... Yeah. I was... disappointed. I guess I'm not a fan of Bryan Singer because I didn't like the first couple. I didn't like Days of Future Past. So I have a feeling I'm not really going to like this one, but whatever. It is what it is. they're, once again, like the Man of Steel talk, they're entertaining movies. They're fun to watch. They're just maybe not the best.
No, definitely not the best. And quite personally, I am sick of Hugh Jackman cameos. Okay? Seriously, we get it. You made the dude look like Wolverine. I can make a bunch of people look like Wolverine. Carry on, people. Move on.
They made an extra $500 million just putting him in there.
Ugh. Ugh. But, yeah. Huh? So, I think that's about all we got to say today.
Yeah, I think I've talked myself for all. And Emily's like, you guys done yet?
I know. This baby's been so good.
She really
has. So good.
Well, I do want to remind everyone before we go that we do now have a YouTube page.
Oh.
Thanks to Rook. There's a couple videos up now, and there will be more to come pretty soon. So just keep posted on there, and you know we'll have a lot of fun stuff in the future on there. So check that out. Any closing words, my friend? Any big conventions?
Hey, I got this really cool book that I'm going to be reading called The Private Eye by Brian Vaughn.
Yeah,
ooh.
The Brian Vaughn.
Brian K. Last Vaughn. Man, all that good stuff. Yes, I picked this up at Yancey. Thanks to Kayla and Brittany. And
it's still like polybagged or sealed.
Yeah, I haven't even opened it yet because I'm so far behind. I still haven't read Sex Criminals yet.
You're freaking.
I've got a ton of stuff to read and a ton of stuff coming up to talk about on the show. So
you're a criminal.
Ugh, I know. I'm a dick.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to us. We're going to have another episode out in about a week. So until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!